Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Bobby French. Bobby has been an educator for 24 years. She has been an elementary guidance counselor, elementary classroom teacher, special education coordinator, Title I director, preschool director, and administrator. Her passion for making sure teachers have the professional learning community appreciation, coaching, and resources they need to be the best for kids every day is one of her most important aspects of her leadership jobs. Welcome to the podcast, Bobby.
Thank you so much for having me, Dana. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Well, I think, you know, it's crazy because we're all in those trenches every day. And I think the difference is that those trenches can be different. You know, no two trenches is sort of the same. And just as you kind of talked about in my bio, I have quite a background of some different roles. And some of those roles I held simultaneously when working in small schools. And I think sometimes as educators, you know, we end up either staying in one place for a really long time. And then I find what's happened is it's hard to try on something new in education. You know, so if you're a teacher and, you know, you've been teaching at the same school for 6-7 years, but you want to try something different at another district, it can be tough to get in because of where, you know, where you are and all the experiences you have. Or for, you know, for me, I had been at, you know, a school for several years and wanted to try something different in public school and went to a new school and it just wasn't the right fit, you know, and we don't hear that too often in education where, you know, someone's in just a place for 1 year because it's not a good fit for them and that they want to make a different choice for their values. And I find that sometimes, you know, that can be held against somebody, you know, like, oh my gosh, why were you there only for a year? Whereas if you were in the corporate world and you tried something for just a year because it wasn't a good fit, people would be cheering you on as you took a risk to try something different. And I don't see that as much in education. And so for me, that's kind of my, you know, coming up through the trenches is, you know, taking that risk to try something different. But really for me, it was, is that being vulnerable and honest in my authentic self to say that that wasn't the right fit for me and knowing that I needed to move on from that, even though it's, you know, something that could hinder my career in the future.
Yeah. And that's, I think some people need to learn from just, you know, look for those areas where you're going to maximize your potential, right? And, you know, things that you're going to be happy doing. So like you said, it's not so much, something that should be looked at poorly in education, right? As it is something, you know, you're trying it out and it's maybe the environment or just the job duties, right? That aren't always the greatest fit. I wanted to ask you a little bit on your Twitter description, you talk about being the social media influencer of the year in 2019. So tell me how you were named that.
So I think for me, that was, well, one of the, interesting roles I've had is for 5 years, I was the principal for a small Catholic school here in Massachusetts and really working towards, you know, a lot of marketing is what you do when you're in those small tuition-based schools. And so really trying to grow our social media presence, you know, that's kind of where a lot of our parents are, a lot of people are. You know, when I first started as a principal and had to work on public relations, we were using the local newspaper. That's what we had, you know, and now we don't. And so I did a lot with our Facebook page. And so I had a teacher nominate me for the NCEA Social Media Influencer of the Year. So it was pretty exciting. It was, I think it was 10 or 12 weeks. There were certain themes every week to be able to post, definitely through social media, using the right hashtags. And so just celebrating the wonderful things that were happening in Catholic education, you know, what we were doing in the classrooms, how we were incorporating STEM, what was showing our Catholic identity, how were we promoting professional learning networks and supporting our teachers. And so just being able to really highlight all the great work that happening at St. Anna's. And so that's just something that comes naturally to me. You know, when I first started there, I think the Facebook page had definitely less than 500 followers, because I remember we like gave out a big prize for our 500, you know, follower. And this is a school of, like, you know, when I left, we had 240 students and we had almost 1500 followers when I was done.
Wow.
But I also contribute that to being an avid photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And so just taking lots of pictures of what's happening during the school day or at events. And so not only did the parents want to see those photos, but grandparents, aunts and uncles, neighbors, community members. So we just really grew our school community, you know, through social media and kind of opening up, you know, the walls, if you will, of our school by showing mm-hmm. everybody what was happening in them through that vehicle.
Mm-hmm,
so that was pretty exciting and pretty, you know, it was very, you know, a big honor to be able to do that, but I was doing something that I'm passionate about at the same time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, tell me a little bit about your current position. You said you're an education coordinator at a school for students with disabilities. So how have your previous teaching background, how has that helped you in the current role that you have?
Well, and it's interesting because my background, I actually have my degrees are in counseling and special mm-hmm. education. So mm-hmm. I took a non-traditional route into my mm-hmm. my teaching career. And so I think having sort of that background, like I started as an elementary guidance counselor with my background mm-hmm. in counseling and okay. quickly learned that I was going to be working with students with special needs and, you know, and writing IEPs and what that process would be like. So my CAGS is in special education. And also as a principal, working with students in substantially separate classrooms, mm-hmm. I think is really, you know, kind of supported my work that way. And I gravitate towards those kids that tend to have some of those more social, emotional sort of, you know, challenges in mm-hmm. order to make school, you know, a place where they feel like they belong and they can be successful. And in my role now, it's really supporting the teachers and the BCBAs that work with these students. So these are students with you know, severe disabilities. The majority, you know, are on the autism spectrum. Mm-hmm. And so they're unable to be educated, you know, in a mainstream type classroom or school. So it's a specialized school. We also have a residential component. But seeing some of the growth of these students, and because of the residential piece, we didn't miss a beat with COVID. You know, mm-hmm. our teaching staff was able to go right out to the residences and work with these students and to see what they're learning in their academics, but also in their vocational skills. We work a lot on, mm-hmm. you know, vocational skills here, what they're doing, you know, socially, you know, so it's just, it's a well-rounded program. And I think everything that I've done and have geared toward, you know, has led me to sort of do this. So I work on the school side and then the special ed side. So I'm pretty much the special ed, you know, personnel here to run all of the IEP and the back end of it, as well as support what's happening in the classroom, mm-hmm. you know, and having like monthly themes. We, you know, did a big March Madness in March. This month I coordinated a road trip. And so we've been taking virtual trips and mm-hmm. tying that into a lot of activities within the classroom and across the school. And in May we are getting ready to grow. So it's been a great experience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what are the ages of students that are in that residential program and how does it look? Is that kind of a group home setting?
So it's students here are ages 6 to 22. Mm-hmm. So we definitely run the wide gamut. Not necessarily group home. What I really love about the school and with the houses is there's no more than 8 students that live in a residence together.
Okay.
And so it's like they live in many houses out in the community and then they take a van to come to the school every day.
Okay.
So it's like they still are able to separate home from school. And then a lot of them will still have, you know, they have extended visits over vacations or weekends, you know, with their families, mm-hmm. but they live and come to school with the same 8 students that are in their residences. So they get to know each other really well. And the staff get to know the students extremely well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. I worked in a group home setting for adults when I was doing a master's degree. So I got a little bit of experience with that. And then the vocational piece as well. And just, you know, taking those individuals out in the community, you know, you learn so much from just getting to know, you know, students and, you know, adults with special needs and, you know, and having those settings where you're able to put on those monthly things. I think that's great. And, you know, just supporting them, like your staff is seeing them both in the home setting and in the school setting. So please tell me a little bit about your podcast. You have a podcast out and what's it called? And also kind of tell me a little bit about what one would expect to hear if they tune into your podcast.
Sure, Dana. So my podcast is called The Busy Principals Podcast. I don't think you can be a principal without being kind of busy. And so really trying to offer any kind of, you know, tips, tricks, hints, anything that I've learned in my 16 years as an educator, mm-hmm. I'm an administrator. So anything from, you know, how you create good habits, how getting up earlier in the morning can help you, to some of the things I talked about. There's a, one of my most popular podcasts is about the March Madness tournament of books, mm-hmm. that I do. So offering some practical strategies. My last podcast was on hiring, how you hire rock stars. You know, this is kind of hiring time and principals are getting ready to hire teachers and staff. So any way that I can take things that I've kind of learned along the journey to share. Mm-hmm. So, the best part is they're all under, most of them I think are under 15 minutes. They're short podcasts. So people like that. Those that have a short commute are able to listen to it all at once. Or some people, like some of your listeners, may listen to my podcast for the first time, but enjoy the content. So it's easy to binge listen and kind of get caught mm-hmm. up that way. So, but like everything, you know, it will evolve. I am, I'm working on expanding it so that I'll be able to have guests and, you know, get some other ideas and tips from other principals across the country.
Great. And you also write a blog. Is that
this podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
That's something you put out every week, and does it have the same sort of themes as for the podcast, or are you developing other themes?
So I do blog. I just actually posted a hiring blog that's similar mm-hmm. to the podcast on my website, bobbyfrench.com, but I'm also proud to be a guest blogger for the Teach Better team. So I'm doing a blog series on Engage Better, and mm-hmm. that's a once a month blog post that comes out the first week of the month. So my engage and acknowledge post will be out next week. And then for myself, I'm just blogging, you know, whenever, you know, there's something that I feel like I have to share that someone can take some value from, mm-hmm. You know, as an educator. So my blogging is really geared towards all educators and not just administrators.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I also teach, blog on Teach Better team, and you know, kind of like you just kind of bring in any insights that come to me. Right, it's not really tied to a specific theme, but yeah, just what people in all aspects of education can gain from what I have to say. Talk to me about some changes that you'd like to see coming up in the next school year. We've learned a lot as we wrap up the 2021 school year, and then kind of specific to your campus, and then how you think things might look different.
Well, I think, you know, to start with for our campus, it's getting our students back into the community. Mm-hmm, that's mm-hmm. a huge component of our programming, both on the school and the residential setting. And so COVID has completely shut that down. Mm-hmm. So we have students that were actually working jobs. They were able to go to the local hotel to swim at the, you know, swimming pool mm-hmm. to have swimming lessons. You know, most of our students are learning how to, you know, go into a store, purchase items, make change, mm-hmm. Order their meals in a restaurant. And so they haven't had that opportunity now for over a year. You mm-hmm. know, you can only replicate those types of scenarios so much in a mock setting within the yeah. school. You know, even our own school store hasn't been opened, you know, in the last year. Oh. We're gearing up for that to open. We have a store that's run by the students for the students. Mm-hmm. So really trying to get back into, you know, those pieces for the students here. But in education in general, I mean, I think it's that focus on where do we go here? What have we found that works for students? You know, we mm-hmm. found that some of these online components students do really well with, mm-hmm. and then for others, they struggle. And so how mm-hmm. do we find a balance so that we're, you know, doing what's right for all students? You know, and for me, it's really, how do we look at some of that mastery learning? Mm-hmm. And that's what we do here. Each student has their own educational programs so that they're mm-hmm. mastering the skills that they need. So how are we looking at mastery learning so that kids can work at their own pace? Mm-hmm. So whether that means that pace might be slower, or another student may be able to do algebra in 3 months and they've got it and they're moving on, mm-hmm. Because of how some students, you know, what they've learned, you know, may have left gaps for some students, or some students may have excelled. And so how do we level that playing field for everybody? You know, I don't mm-hmm. think you can just say, you know, where all third graders are going to be in fall of 2021, and how do we engage students more? you know, mm-hmm, as they're coming mm-hmm. back into a school setting, you know, what are we doing to make sure that school is still fun, a place that they want to be, that they're learning? How do we add some, you know, hands-on project-based learning, nature-based learning? You know, what are we doing with those? I'd just love to see some of those changes in education, mm-hmm. you know, and just really get some people making those decisions sitting around a table to say, you know, what can education be now? You know, we know mm-hmm. what it was like before, but we're not in that industrial age anymore. You know, mm-hmm. so this is a time to really rethink education and have that opportunity to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we've experienced a lot of just different innovative ideas this year. And like you said, that nature-based learning. I know my kids went to an expeditionary learning school in elementary school, and they did a lot of hikes and, you know, field trips that were nature-based and things like that. But doing it more like, you know, having more classes outside, I think those teachers who have taught on campus have done more classes outside this year, but kind of not forgetting that, not forgetting the benefits of taking kids out and, you know, learning more about what's around you, right? And then, like you said, not having those structures that we've had for, you know, the last 100 years or so, right? Because we're moving into a new era. It's going to be pre-COVID and post-COVID, I think. And you know, what can we keep from this year and move on to make things even better? You talked to me in the pre-chat about being a big proponent of ed camps, and talk to me about some of the virtual ed camps that you have attended recently or that you're going to be a part of in the summer.
So, yeah, I mean, I've always loved ed camps. And, you know, for any of your listeners that aren't sure, you know, an ed camp is really that unconference where, mm-hmm. you know, for us educators come together and there's no set agenda. The agenda is mm-hmm. really driven by the participants. And so finding a way, you know, to do that virtually. Mm-hmm. So over the summer, you know, teachers are really trying to plan for what is fall going to look like. And so a friend of mine, we did launch our own ed camp to bring educators together virtually, ed camp Lead, Learn, Hope. Mm-hmm. And so that was really successful. We had a great time. And then I'm a member of my own Principals Association, MSAA, here in Massachusetts. And they usually do an ed camp every spring. And so we decided to do one virtually. So I was really, you know, honored to be able to share that from my experiences. And so in February, we brought over 100 people together from 10 states. And that's what was nice, is we were able to bring, you know, educators across the country and even in Canada together to talk about some deep issues. You know, some things were as simple as, you know, engagement in the remote classroom. We had some great sessions on anti, you know, racism curriculum. We talked about, you know, doing teacher observations, how to just, you know, how are you doing PBIS in sort of a remote mm-hmm. world? And so it was great because you had so many different voices, and even people in Massachusetts loved the virtual piece because they didn't have to travel an hour mm-hmm. or longer, you know, to get to a place to do ed camp, and it allowed, you know, those connections. And so we're actually looking at doing another one in June here in Massachusetts called Ed Camp Play. Our mm-hmm. Department of Elementary and Secondary Education has just released a new play statement about bringing play into education, which mm-hmm. it never should have left education. and so we're hoping to have an ed camp for our early educators to talk all about play and how we're going to be able to, some ideas on infusing play into that pre-K through 3 curriculum.
Great. Yeah. I really like that idea of just getting together and kind of seeing how it evolves, having that organic, you know, conference of just what people need. And, you know, I think, like you said, in those type of settings where people are able to join from wherever and learn from each other and tell others what they're doing in their schools is so beneficial, right? I think we've had a great conversation today around a lot of aspects about what you're doing and just your role and at your school, but what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
Well, I think it's just, you know, whatever your passion is, just sort of go for it. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I think we've kind of talked about that and the different things, you know, that I've been able to do, from telling my school's story to trying on a role that didn't work for me, you know, that I started up. Podcast that I blog, you know, I think, you know, if you're passionate about education, you know, share what you're doing with others. Everybody mm-hmm. can learn from each other, which again is evident from the ed camp, you know. There's no reason to be teaching in silos anymore with our doors closed, you know. Everyone has these great ideas to share, and the support's there if you need it, you know. COVID has has caused a lot of stress for educators in the last year. And so for, you know, educators to just know that there are supports out there and other people that hear you and see you and know the hard work that you've done in the last year.
That's important to remember as we wrap up the year. Well, where can people connect with you and find you online?
So definitely on Twitter, but I like to say you can find me on all the socials at Bobby French. So B-O-B-B-I-E French. But yeah, definitely Twitter, Instagram. I also run a Facebook page and a Facebook group called Lead, Learn, Hope. So you can also find me there. And sometimes you'll even see me on Clubhouse.
Great. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. Thanks and have a great rest of your day.
Thanks so much, Dana. It was great to be here.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it, and if this episode resonates especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.